If you're just joining us, we're talking about employee policies and workplace legal situations amid the pandemic. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Are employers required to follow social distancing protocols to ensure both workers and customers remain 6 feet away from each other? Are businesses required to provide employees with PPE like masks or face shields? Can you ask your workplace for an accommodation that would make it safer to do your job if you have an underlying medical condition, like, say, a private office instead of a cube or staggering shifts? So many questions to get at. What are yours in the area of labor law? We're at 800-642-1234. Eric Eisenman is partner at the Milwaukee law firm Hush Blackwell, where he heads the firm's labor and employment practice. Eric, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Well, in what circumstances do employees have the right to not return to their work site and their job and receive unemployment benefits instead? What does that look like?
So this is one of the biggest questions that we've been seeing as we're sort of entering the new phase of return to work over the last couple weeks. The short answer is that it's a fairly high standard. It's a difficult argument for an employee to make if she or he is fearful about returning to work and wants to still remain eligible to receive benefits. The way that the system is structured is that in most instances, if the employer is reopening, if there is work available for an employee, then she's going to have an obligation to return. Now, the caveat and the question that we're getting is, you know, what if the employer hasn't taken sufficient steps to make my workplace safe? Has the employer implemented environmental changes in the workplace? You just alluded to it in your intro in terms of reconfiguring the space, putting up partitions, and beginning to implement rules about wearing masks or social distancing. In an extreme situation where the employer is not creating a safe workplace, that employee could raise a concern. She could file a complaint with an agency like the Federal Occupational Safety and Health Administration.
OSHA,
Exactly. And so there might be a basis there. The other category that we see is if someone has actually a bona fide medical condition. If you are somebody with a suppressed immune system, if you've got a respiratory issue or something else that puts you in a high risk category, and you are not medically able to return to work for fear of being exposed during the pandemic, there is discretion that the state agency would have, and you might still be eligible for benefits in that category as well.
But just because you're in an upper age group, you're in your 60s or 70s, that wouldn't deem you necessarily immediately qualified for saying, no, I'll get assistance and not go back to work.
Exactly. That's the toughest question, I would say. There have been some states like Iowa, our neighbor, for instance, where the governor has explicitly come out and said, you know, if your employer reopens and your job is available and you choose not to come, you are not eligible. Wisconsin has not been so explicit. But if you look at the unemployment eligibility rules, in most instances, even a legitimate fear like what you just described of somebody who might be in a higher risk category, it's going to be difficult for them to continue to remain eligible if their employer has that work available.
So if that employee is deemed ineligible to receive those unemployment benefits, what legal recourse do they have?
Well, to the extent that they are, if they're suffering from a COVID-related illness or they're taking care of an individual with COVID, they might be able to qualify for benefits under the new federal legislation that was passed back in April, the Families First Coronavirus Response Act. If their employer is under 500 employees, but generally over 50 employees, that 50 to 500 threshold is the one we're looking at, the employer is probably subject to that law, and the employee might be eligible to take paid leave, either for their own illness related to COVID, or as I mentioned, caring for somebody, or expanded family leave if they need to stay home to take care of a child who's at home because of a school closure.
We're talking with Eric Eisenman about what employers and employees should know as businesses open back up in Wisconsin. Eric's a labor and employment attorney in Milwaukee. Have you filed for unemployment? Have you been receiving your checks? Are you a business owner? Are you concerned for your workers and those who may not return? Join in with your labor law questions, 800-642-1234. Matt called in from Johnson Creek wanting to address that people who work from home right now could be working overtime longer than they did in the office. So, Eric, how might employers deal with that overtime? What can employees do to address the situation?
Good question. A lot of us, I think, that have shifted from the office setting to the remote work setting, and I find myself in that same category, are often seeing the workday blend into the home day, right? So, you know, we're working in the evenings or we're working in times we wouldn't have previously because the computer's right there. The threshold question that an individual or an employer has to ask is whether the worker is an exempt employee, somebody who falls in the salaried category under the Federal Fair Labor Standards Act, where we would pay them a fixed rate, a fixed salary, or a non-exempt employee, someone who's an hourly employee. If you're an exempt employee, a salaried employee, then your compensation is going to remain the same regardless of how many hours you work in a given work week. So if you find yourself working more from home, I guess the short answer is that's unfortunately part of the deal. If you are a non-exempt employee, however, if you're an hourly employee, the fact that you may be working remotely does not alter the fact that you are still eligible for overtime if you're working more than 40 hours in a given work week. So if an employer has remote workers who are hourly, you know, that employer is going to need to have a system in place whereby they're able to monitor the hours that are actually being worked. And even if an employer says you're not allowed or you're only scheduled to work 40 hours, but that non-exempt employee works more than 40 hours, she would actually be entitled to that overtime compensation for those extra hours worked. You know, employers will attempt to sort of clearly communicate those expectations. And they have, you know, if a person is consistently working more than they're supposed to, the employer can take corrective action, discipline against that employee, but they still have to pay for that extra time worked.
So some people are returning to work without having their unemployment claims processed yet, the unemployment assistant backlog not kicking in. Can they still receive those paychecks in the future?
Yes, and this is one of the very frustrating things that folks are experiencing as the state of Wisconsin and virtually all states are dealing with this, you know, unprecedented number of claims. The state is hiring people to process these unemployment claims, trying to train people, but there's still a substantial backlog, as you mentioned. The guidance that the state has issued has said that as long as you complete your application timely, that is to say that you submit that application during a period when you would be eligible for benefits, even if you're not able to receive those benefits because of the lag in processing time and you get it and you're able to return to work, you should still be receiving that check for that time that you were eligible. So you might not have it in hand now, but if there was a period of time where you were out of work, where you submitted at a proper application and were eligible, you should still be paid for that time.
Well, let's take a call here. Jay is in Two Rivers. Hi, Jay.
Good morning. My wife applied for unemployment March 15th, and due to an error from the unemployment office, she was initially denied. But they cleared that up, and she finally just this week got her unemployment card, but has been unable to activate it. Have you any suggestions?
A good question. You know, I think you are suffering, or she's suffering, like a lot of folks are, as a result of sort of the backlog. You know, we have been having even difficulty in our office in getting folks from the unemployment department on the phone when we've got questions. I think that, you know, continuing to attempt to communicate with the office by phone, by email, the various different ways that we can do that would be my recommendation. The peace of mind that I could give is, you know, given that she has the card, given that you've got that determination that she was eligible, similar to the question that Kate just posed, she should be receiving benefits for that period of time.
Jay,
other than...
Yeah, and Jay, is there any phone number on the back of the card?
Yes, and she did try calling and emailing.
And couldn't get through to someone.
That's right. I think she left a message. And regarding the federal contribution of $600 per week, is that supposed to come in the mail, or is that going to be included on her card? Because so far that didn't show up.
That's a good question, Jay, and one that we're getting a lot. So this $600 that Jay mentioned was a result of the Federal CARES Act that was passed. It was an additional benefit of $600 above the regular benefit that an individual would receive under the state unemployment structure. That is in effect through July 31st. And to Jay's question, that is implemented and paid through the states. So it's a federal benefit, but it is going to be paid by the state agency. So in your case, Jay, for your wife, that should get paid along with the state benefit.
But it may be on a different timeline, it sounds like.
Well, because it's administered through the state, my sense is that you're probably not going to receive it any faster than you would the state benefits.
Okay. And in Jay's situation, it wasn't coupled together, that, you know, it wasn't coming together. So maybe that money is dropped in on a different timeline.
It's possible. It's possible. My sense and experience has been that those are typically being paid together. But, I would say, Jay, if and when you are successful in getting a live person to answer that question, that would be a good one to ask.
We're talking with Milwaukee labor attorney Eric Eisenman about employee rights, workplace policies in this era of COVID. Do you have a labor lawyer helping you with your unemployment situation? What's at the heart of the dispute? Have you been laid off or furloughed? What information coming from your employer is confusing to you or contradicting what you're hearing elsewhere? Do you care for a child at home? Can't return to work due to lack of childcare? What are you learning from your employer? Still time to talk. 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Eric Eisenman right here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. So many workplace questions. We're looking at your labor law issues with Eric Eisenman. He's an attorney who works on cases involving labor and employment, and he stays with us. Let's get back to your questions. Carlene is in Madison.
Oh,
hi, Carlene.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. What is your question?
I have a question. I won't say where I work. But anyways, I had a doctor's note the whole nine yards and filled out a COVID-19 packet, and I'm high risk. And I sent it in, did everything I was supposed to do with it. And in a matter of minutes, I was denied. And I just want to know my rights.
And when you say you had a whole packet, you had a doctor's note, I understand.
Right, a doctor's note, and there was about 3 pages in the packet that I had to fill out for the COVID-19, and I was denied, and I'm high risk.
All right, Carlene, thank you. Eric, any suggestions there?
So I guess the question would be, when Carlene says she's denied it, do we think that she was denied from her unemployment benefits, or was she denied paid leave from her employer? Is Carlene still with us?
Yeah. Yes, I am.
Sure. Yeah. What would you say you were denied, Carlene? What were you denied for?
I was denied. I was just denied from working at home. They said I would have to take a leave of absence or something, but I don't. Do you get paid for that?
All right, Carlene. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for that clarification. So this is a good question, right? Is that somebody who is at an elevated risk or has a medical issue, like Carlene does? And requests for her employer that she have an accommodation to be able to perform her job from home. There are some jobs that the remote work has been fairly seamless. There's others where it's difficult to perform your jobs from home. And in the pre-COVID world, there was a fair body of case law that said that, you know, an employee isn't automatically entitled to a work from home accommodation unless they had a bona fide medical reason for that. And that the working from home did not create an undue hardship on the employer. Here, in the last couple of months, we've seen a lot of jobs shifting from home. And what I would say, shifting to home, and what I would say is that it is going to be easier for an employee to argue that she can perform her job from home because, you know, we're all sort of, you know, doing a little bit more teleworking than we used to be. In Carlene's case, or in a case of somebody who's got that medical issue, an employer is typically going to have an obligation to engage in what they call the interactive process to analyze what that person's medical condition is, whether it's a bona fide request that's supported by medical information to be able to work remotely, and then whether the employer can accommodate that that job, whether that person can do that from home. And in many instances, like I said now, since we're going to have a body of evidence saying that a lot of these jobs can be performed in whole or in part remotely, the employer may have an obligation to grant that kind of request.
Carlene, thank you. Let's bring in Kelly now in Milwaukee. Hi, Kelly.
Hi, good morning. How are you?
Good.
So my question is, I'm a healthcare professional, and I was brought back to work prior to safer at home being lifted before that was all, you know, taken away by the legislature. And I raised some concerns, some safety, workplace safety concerns. And my employer told me that my concerns were not valid because they were not legally mandated because OSHA has issued guidance and not guidelines, and so they're not enforceable. Could you comment on that?
Yes, yeah, and this is a sort of still a muddy area, as you've experienced firsthand. OSHA is a federal agency that is fairly slow-moving, like a lot of state and federal agencies can be. And it's correct that OSHA has not issued a specific rule or regulation addressing the COVID pandemic in the workplace. There was a lawsuit that was filed about a week or two ago by the federal or the labor unions, AFL-CIO, asking OSHA to implement the temporary rule addressing this. I think that's probably unlikely to happen. But what we are seeing is OSHA does still have enforcement authority under what's called the General Duty Clause of the Occupational Safety and Health Act. So what you're seeing is in workplaces where there is a real issue, where an employer is failing to take appropriate action to keep its employees safe, OSHA has the authority and actually is conducting investigations and responses to employee complaints. So even though there's not a specific standard on point, OSHA still does have that power. The clarifier, the caveat I would say is that you can imagine there are a lot of complaints being made right now to OSHA.
Right.
So their resources are strained, and I think it is a challenge for them to respond to all of the issues that employees are raising. But the takeaway is that if you do have a real fear that there is an issue in your workplace, you still do have the ability to file a complaint, and OSHA may investigate.
Eric Eisenman, a labor and employment attorney in Milwaukee. We're looking at the workplace situations and labor law amid the pandemic. Let's go to Brad now in Sockville. Hi, Brad.
Hi.
What's your question?
I'm calling because my question was, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
My question is, I'm a seasonal worker. My season ended October 27th. And my regular UI benefits ended on March 28th. Now, because I had already gone through my entire UI benefits, there was no application for me to fill out regarding the unemployment during for the 5 weeks that I was out of work. Now, because I was not able to fill out an application during what would be an eligible period of time for me, does that mean that the back weeks from March 28th to up until the point when I started working, I will not be able to qualify for because I was not able to fill out an application in a timely manner due to the system?
Mm.
So that's a good question. And the state kind of addresses that issue in some of its guidance. You know, the devil's in the details here. You know, if you attempted to submit an application, if you accessed and completed and submitted an application, you know, you should be eligible for benefits if you were otherwise eligible under the guidelines. If you were able to start an application but couldn't finish it or couldn't submit it, I think that's going to be a more challenging situation for you because they're going to say, you know, that completed application is the benchmark to be eligible. That said, you may be aware that the Federal CARES Act expanded eligibility for unemployment. So some individuals, independent contractors, seasonal workers who were losing opportunities as a result of the economic slowdown were eligible for benefits when they might not have previously been. So my advice would probably be to continue to pursue that claim to see whether you're able to show that you began that application process, because you might be eligible and the rules might be a little bit relaxed compared to what they would have previously been.
Brad, thank you for the call. Eric, only some daycares are open. Schools remain closed. What can workers do if they can't return to work because they don't have childcare?
This is a huge question because we're coming up on the end of the school year. So I mentioned before that the Families First Coronavirus Response Act, this FFCRA, the federal legislation, which created a paid leave for individuals for their own COVID-related illnesses, and an additional paid leave, extended family and medical leave for people taking care of kids with their schools were closed. The question is, when school is out and some daycares are open, is someone who could be receiving those paid benefits under the FFCRA still eligible or still able to receive those benefits? And I think that employers are going to be analyzing this on a case-by-case basis. I think that there is a risk that employers are going to be able to say, now that school is done, an individual, would typically have alternative care plans for their child during the summer. Some daycares are open, so we're going to expect you to return to work, and that person may not be eligible to continue to receive those paid benefits. So I think that's a challenge that a lot of workers are going to be facing.
Well, Eric, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
You too. Stay well. Eric Eisenman, partner at the Milwaukee law firm Hush Blackwell, where he heads the firm's labor and employment practice. Just ahead, we take a trip on the wild side. Love snakes, snails, rats, toads, and bugs. We have two animal experts, plus Wildcrat star Chris Kratt. Give us the lowdown on animals that creep, crawl, slink, and slither. So do you have a rat, a hedgehog, a turtle, snake, ferret, a pet lizard? What's their name? What are they like? Call in 800-642-1234 for our Creature Hour. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This is The Morning Show, and we're slithering on the Ideas Network.